At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal. At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Eric.
And I'm Jonathan.
Jonathan, and this is Star Wars TV Cast.
This week, we're covering Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 3.
Before we get into it, I'd like to say, yes, Vader! But also, welcome to the podcast, welcome. Jonathan. First time
welcome.
Hosting.
Thank you. It's great to be on. Very excited.
Jonathan's guest hosted a couple of times, but he's going to be a regular host in the rotation for this. It's only a few more episodes, but it's pretty great. And I thought instead of a Star Wars question of the week this week, we would just kind of ask you, since it's your first time, just kind of what kind of a Star Wars fan you are. When did you discover the movies? What have you seen? And what are your favorites? Anything like that that you'd want to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I hate to admit it, but I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and it's only when I see all of this and see all the new series, I realize how kind of deeply ingrained into my life it has been. And I first saw Star Wars: A New Hope in 1977 as a 10-year-old boy, which was kind of like the perfect moment to see it. I went with all my cousins, six boys in the cinema, and we had no idea what it was, and then just sitting there, eyes wide open, the John Williams soundtrack, Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, Han Solo, all the lot, and then we came out of the theater and we're running up and down George Street in Sydney going pew pew pew, shooting lasers.
Do you remember what you did think it was going to be? Like, what did you think you were going to?
Well, because we grew up watching a lot of kind of World War II films, like The Guns of Navarone and The Great Escape and things like that, and it was called Star Wars. So I remember asking someone who had seen it, I'm like, was there a lot of gore? And they're like, well, someone gets their arm chopped off. But I really had no idea what it was how much of an opera it would be, and it was just such a different film at the time, and it was such a big adventure. I was unprepared for it, but came out having it, literally changing my life, because
it changed everything. In movies.
It's sometimes hard to, like, I watch it with my kids and
they're like, this is boring.
I try to tell them that nothing like this had ever been, in the movies. It's so kind of commonplace now that it's hard to recapture that.
Yeah, I mean, that opening scene, that huge spaceship coming through, and you just were transported into somewhere that you'd never been before, and those special effects were just, you'd never ever seen anything like it.
Special effects were often very cheesy before that. And for the longest time, maybe even to this day, I just thought, wow, I can't believe how well the effects in Star Wars hold up for being a movie that came out in 1977, So great. Well, what about, like, so you've seen all of the movies, right?
Yeah, seen all of the movies. I like the prequels, and I've come to really like them over the years. And, And the, you know, and but with the over time, I've come to despise the sequels more and more.
I'm pretty much the same, which kind of almost puts them at the same level for me.
Yeah,
yeah. You know what I mean. But anyway, we talked about.
But
that
if
last
I
time.
Watched all of the Clone Wars, and because that was, you know, I kind of discovered it when I wasn't looking for it. I'm like, oh, I wonder what these are like, and they're much better than you expect. And I came to really like Anakin as a character, and not, you know, after the prequels as the whole I hate sand thing and everything. But then, you know, in the Clone Wars, he's a hero and he's admirable and all of that. And it all came to a moment was years later when I hadn't watched A New Hope for many years. And then there's a scene of Obi-Wan and Vader meeting for the first time. And I'm just like, oh my God, that's Anakin. And it's I finally it all came together, and I realized the tragedy of it all, and, and it just it had so much more impact after watching that.
Absolutely, that's what I mean. I was going to say the same. This series, I know a lot of people are coming to the series. Most people not having watched the Clone Wars, and it's 7 seasons, you know, I don't know, 100 some episodes or something. Yeah. It's a lot. But I'll just say, if you did go through that, and I did go through it last year or the year before, there's a lot more weight to this series that we're watching right now, because you saw Obi-Wan and Anakin fight together and argue like brothers and just give quips to each other and have some really heartfelt moments together and just go through all of this stuff together that really just adds a lot more to how their the tragedy of how their relationship ended up, you know?
Yeah. You know, they glossed over it in the movie, but when you go back and watch the Clone Wars, you could see the bond that they had. You could see how he fell and how that whole process took place. Whereas in the movie, it was just like, okay, he's bad.
He's bad now.
It just makes it so much better.
Mm-hmm. And when Obi-Wan says, "You are my brother, Anakin," it's just so heartbreaking if you've seen all that extra.
Right. Yeah. You know.
All those really seem like brothers after that show. They feel like brothers to me now, where they kind of did in the prequels, but not nearly as much.
No, it's more of a master Padawan kind of thing.
Right.
In the movies, but they became equals, and
they became equals, and they fought together, and they were so badass they could jump like 30 feet high and just, you know, kill anybody. And Obi-Wan was so powerful, so that's another thing that's a big contrast, because since the Clone Wars, Anakin, now Vader, has become so powerful in the dark side. Meanwhile, Obi-Wan has shrunk into himself and kind of become weak. So their power differential is a lot greater now.
Yeah.
I just rewatched a couple episodes, and it is a huge difference. It was kind of almost shocking to remember how badass he was in the Clone Wars, and then to see him now, it makes it that much harder.
But it makes sense for the story, I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And if you haven't watched The Clone Wars, they're kind of grouped in 3 or 4 episodes. So they're almost like movies. So if you want to watch it, you can pick out a 3 or 4 episode arc, and it's just like watching an animated Star Wars film.
That's a good point. And also, it's a good idea to go and search out what are the best Clone Wars episodes, because there's some stinkers in there.
Yeah. For sure. Droid adventures.
It took a little bit to get going, but I think towards the end, it really was awesome.
Once you get hooked in, it's like, all right, we should get going with this week's episode, because it was kind of good. It was Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 3. In general, what did you think, Jonathan?
Oh, look, I loved it. And it really, you know, it gave you the Star Wars vibes. And there was a moment, a moment when Vader came walking down that street and Obi-Wan looked out the window. I suddenly felt that I was in a cinema watching a massive screen, and I'm watching real Star Wars. You know, not an animated version, not a TV version,
not side story.
Actually, side story, but the story, the legend. You know, and I loved it. You know, like, I don't even want to nitpick anything at this stage, and because it's just, it's so good to get real Star Wars with John Williams' soundtrack, with original actors, you know,
James Earl Jones.
And just to hear that voice again was so. And I remember on the podcast last week, Jason, you were like, what are they going to do? Have James Earl Jones come back in? And then, of course, they do.
Boom.
But I loved it. Yeah, I'm very happy. And I'm almost a little bit sad that we're halfway through after only a week.
I know. Huh? We're already halfway through. Holy crap.
It's hard to think that there's only a couple more.
It was going to be a movie, and they decided, so, you know, we'd be done if it was a movie. So
yeah, that's
could
true.
Look
yeah,
at that
yeah,
one. Yeah. What about you, Eric?
Again, I want to echo what Jonathan said. It was awesome. It pulled you in. It made you feel like you were in the movies. Seeing, you know, Darth Vader just on the screen anytime, it's just awesome. And him being so brutal and it was awesome.
Horrific.
It was really cool. Yeah. I mean, you always knew that, you know, he was a bad guy, but this kind of really sealed the deal and just broke showed him how angry and vengeful he was. But beside that, you know, Leia, you know, the actress, she's just awesome. She was great. Kenobi, I mean, all of them just did so great. It was an awesome episode.
Yeah, what I admire is, you know, Vader is one of the most recognizable iconic villains ever. He's number one on a bunch of villains lists. And still, when they do him right, they can add to it and make it even better. Like in Rogue One, the Vader scene was incredible. And though maybe it quite didn't match up, who cares? It was awesome.
It did not matter.
In this, same. Like I saw some things I'd never seen with Vader before, and they really just made, like, it's kind of like The Mandalorian, where I say it's a show of moments where they can just capture this feeling and just really lean into it and let it breathe. They did that with Vader so well in this episode.
But it felt real, you know, it felt like something he would do. It didn't feel out of character, even though it was, you know, horrific.
The only thing that felt maybe a little out of character is that he didn't just like walk around those flames and go after everyone, but we need the big fight for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we could talk about that for half an hour. I think I have ways.
I have a reason. I think I know.
Okay. Well, let's get into our points. Jonathan. Yeah.
Well, look, let's just start with Vader and to see Vader again in the beginning when they were attaching the armor. And just to see how all that worked on him, like attaching the arm, the chest plate being inserted into him, the helmet coming down, and that vacuum seal moment when the helmet kind of hits, and then you hear the breathing start, again, not to go over too much, but it was real Vader, real Star Wars, the real actors, and I think we actually saw. Hayden Christensen in the suit when he was walking down that street, and he's
even when the mask was coming down, you see his face a little bit. I'm pretty sure that's Hayden Christensen, fucked up by special or makeup.
You know, I never knew. I mean, I always knew that he was more man than machine, but I didn't realize how. I mean, even that whole process was brutal, and I never realized that the control plate had these huge spikes that like halfway into his, you know, into his torso. I mean, I always thought that was just it's more like a suit, but he really is, you know, half machine.
But I guess the Star Wars armor with those lights on a half life support and actually do something rather than just flash on and off. But just the shots of Mustafar and the wide shots of Vader looking out onto the lava field, where looking and assuming that he's just looking down at the place where he was defeated to remind himself of the pain and to keep the revenge fire going. the sweep of his cape when he walks, the flare of the cape when he walks off, and that moment when Vader turned on his heels, it was somehow so Star Wars and so Empire Strikes Back. It all just felt super real, and that's why I keep coming back to Star Wars, is for those moments when it feels super Star Wars. But the dread, the vengeance, the horror of seeing Vader, and to see Ewan McGregor's acting at the time, it was fantastic.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm glad you're focusing in a lot on the movement. I'm pretty sure I read that they had a movement, like a Vader movement specialist on set the whole time. And it's so important, even like with the Mandalorian too, the way he moves is so important to the character. And especially with Vader, because the only other time we saw Hayden Christensen in that suit was when he turned into Frankenstein and went, no, that was horrible. Which we're not doing that again.
Horrible.
But the Frankenstein thing that you mentioned was there. It was like that relentless thing, like no matter how far you could run, you know, when you turned around, the Frankenstein version of Vader was right behind you, and it was relentless and scary, and it was everything you want for a return of Vader.
Yeah.
I mean, I like seeing his fortress. You know, we got to see his throne room, and that he set up, you know, his living quarters where he was, you know, practically killed.
Yeah.
I think also says something, but it was really neat to see.
He's so clean. There's no clutter or anything.
A very sparse aesthetic. Very
high style. So for people who don't know, that's Fortress Vader, or sometimes called Vader's Castle. It was first seen on screen in Rogue One. And there's this great VR game called Vader Immortal, where you get to go there and you could just look around. And I just think it's so cool. It's the way it's like a pyramid with two spires. And apparently it was constructed or designed by a force sensitive architect, particularly to harness the dark side of the force or something like that. And there's a Sith cave below that Vader used to meditate in. I mean, with the comics, they put all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff about that.
The most interesting thing is what you said, that it's on Mustafar where he lost his battle in Revenge of the Sith with Obi-Wan, where Obi-Wan chopped off his arms and legs because he had the high ground, and then he burnt up there. His whole body was charred, and he thought he was dead.
Yeah, I'm sure there's been some dissertations on the advantage of the high ground. It will be argued for centuries.
You know?
I was
Eric?
Like, what? He's got the high ground.
I think
like,
I'll just.
It's
I mean,
over. I'm up here. It's over. Might as well. Right.
And then he just jumps. Yeah. He just jumps over him and then just immediately gets his legs chopped off.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Just got a free coffee with my EarniFi points.
Your what?
The points I get with the new EarniFi app from BP and Amoco. I got 250 for signing up and more every time I fill up or buy anything in the C-store.
Oh, can you use points for fuel?
Of course.
And discounts and deals?
On anything.
Oh, like chips?
Mm-hmm.
Sodas?
You got it.
The actual slushy machine.
Only what's actually for sale. But you do get double the points for the first 90 days. Just go to EarnifiRewards.com to download the app.
Available at participating locations only. App content is subject to change.
I think I just want to just add to the Vader stuff. I mean, seeing him, you know, first come on screen and light up his lightsaber, it was just so Star Wars.
The way he had it angled down.
Right.
And there was a shot of Obi-Wan from Darth Vader's side, like low to the side. Mm-hmm. And then you just see the blade go out.
And it was awesome to see like how, I mean, we obviously know that Obi-Wan's going through a rough time and that he's, you know, kind of almost abandoned his Jedi-ness. But Vader just seemed like he was just toying with him. You know, he was smashing him with his lightsaber. He's only using one hand. It was like
he was barely moving his hand, like, and meanwhile, yeah, everyone's got both hands on his saber block.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that was just like another way to torture him, you know, to
play with
show him how much more powerful he was, and that I think that's part of the reason why he didn't jump through the fire, that he wants to have him like continue living in fear because he knows that Vader is coming for him.
And I also thought there was a sense of disgust even that Vader had for Obi-Wan, that he'd fallen so far and that he was actually just beneath him and was halfway through when he's holding him up there. And I'm like, after all this time, this is who Obi-Wan is, and it's not even worth my effort. But I still thought he could have jumped over the flames.
I mean, you would think some guy who got burned up would have a fireproof suit or something, or at least be able to jump.
Well, like, he force pulled that container of, I think it was whatever substance they mine on this planet, who knows, but whatever it was flammable. Then he ignited it with his sword and at the same time lifted Obi-Wan up like he's lifted other people up, but it's hard to see Obi-Wan in that position, and then just slammed him right down into the flames and started dragging him through it. And then he, like, I think he like extinguished the flames with the force. And I'm like, that was the part where I felt a little critical, like, well, are you going to burn him up or not?
If he could have done that,
I don't think he's burned.
Well, maybe he just wanted to burn him a little.
Yeah. But then he said, your suffering has only just begun, or something like that. So I think, he wanted to torture
him. He was going to light it again, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he wants to make him suffer for a long time because his whole life is suffering.
Right.
And he blames Obi-Wan for that.
Mm. You know, even when he was walking through the village and the second he notices or feels Ben is when he starts killing people, and he knows that he's watching.
I love
that.
And
he's just sitting there,
it's horrible, like, but
going, come on, cracking people's necks and dragging people through.
Yeah, I like that they didn't really explain that. Maybe it's pretty clear, but they, in a lot of shows, they would have tried to explain it or something. But he's just doing, I mean, the same thing he did in Empire Strikes Back with torturing Han Solo as bait for Luke, right? He knows that Obi-Wan is somewhere near, and that if he starts hurting innocent people, that he'll come out, because that's, I think, Vader considers that his weakness.
And that palpable panic of the population that just started to run through the town, like one after the, no one knew what was coming, but everyone knew that something bad was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that just that flick of the finger that broke that guy's neck, and you just said, oh my God, this is serious Vader, you know.
Right. He's not screwing around.
Because I don't think I caught that for some reason on first watch. I just saw him choking one guy and slam another guy against the wall. And as I'm watching it second time, I'm writing notes like, yeah, he's torturing these people, because I'm like, oh shit, he just broke that guy's neck, dude.
Right.
But the interesting thing with that neck break was Reva's reaction. It gave her pause, and she suddenly thought, what the hell have I got myself into? Because even she was horrified at the casual brutality of that moment. Which is interesting, because it's, you know, we still don't know her motivations.
Yeah.
Right. I think there's definitely something there.
Because we're getting more possible motivations in this episode, which we'll talk about, but I feel like, there's still more we don't know. There's some secret with her.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else, Eric?
I'll add, we've known that Obi-Wan is suffering, and not that he would have come out at that moment, because, you know, he was obviously overwhelmed, but to be able to not go in and try to stop him at that moment just shows kind of how far he's fallen, you know, that Vader was doing all this stuff and he just kind of,
I mean,
not let him, but
he didn't jump right out.
He couldn't do much, I guess. I don't know.
But he told this woman, what's her name? Tala?
The
one that was helping them?
The
to take Leia. Go take Leia to Alderaan. I'm going to lure him away. So he did act. He didn't act immediately, yeah. but he didn't run away and cower away like he was doing back on Tatooine when people needed help.
That's true. That's true.
But even though he knew he was overpowered and out of his depth, and that Vader could easily kill him, he realized that it was his duty to lead them away from Leia.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah,
and all these people,
and all the rest. Yeah.
Okay, I want to add whatever I can from my thoughts on Vader. We just see his shadow along the wall,
yeah,
and he has such an unmistakable silhouette.
yeah,
you just see his feet and his hand with his saber hanging at his side, just little by little, and Obi-Wan's panic. And then when he's walking down, you can finally see him in full, and Obi-Wan's just looking on in horror, and he's like, this is the first time he's seen what Anakin has become, and it's like, oh my God. And I wonder if Obi-Wan knew of Darth Vader before this, if he knew of his existence or not. I don't know. You know,
yeah, that is a question.
Yeah, that would, and I don't think I'd ever thought of that, and it would kind of make sense. I mean, if
he's a Jedi hunter.
Right. I mean, you would think that they would know.
Yeah. We'd think there'd be at least rumor that there was a new Sith Lord out in the, because he's so iconic, well, even he's so recognizable and has been given the power, you know. And if you know about the Inquisitors, then obviously Vader would be known. But you know, obviously in the last episode, we see that Obi-Wan has no idea that Anakin's even still alive, let alone Darth Vader.
Right.
Yeah. So he either didn't know anything about Vader and was like, oh my God, Anakin's alive and has turned into this, or he was like, oh my God, Anakin's alive and he's Darth Vader.
Yeah.
No.
No. So,
that's not true.
That's impossible. You're not my friend. So then Vader's force dragging this woman down the street. That was another thing. As she screams in pain. We had never seen that before. That was pretty chilling. And then Obi-Wan is going after, looking for him. And then, we see him draw his blade. And then Obi-Wan looks at his lightsaber and then runs away. Which was great because he knows he's overpowered here.
And I don't think Vader is very mobile. You know, it's not like Vader's going to sprint after him. But he will, you know, so I think that is an actual option, is to just run from Vader, especially if he's on his own.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, at least he doesn't do that. Maybe he's like, you know, he's Johnny Depp, like, it just would be cool to move like that. But,
but look, it's heartbreaking to see Obi-Wan Kenobi fall so low.
Yeah.
You see him so weak in the face of Vader, and so rusty and so out of practice, and not believing in himself, and to see Obi-Wan to have fallen so far is heartbreaking to watch.
It is, but I think it's a good place for the character to grow from, and I think he will by the end of this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I hope so. So then he says, you know, what have you become? And Vader says, I am what you made me. Which I read was a mixture of James Earl Jones and Hayden Christensen's voice. But when I listen to it, I just hear James Earl Jones. So I don't know.
I just hear a Vader from Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think apparently they use the same voice changing technology they used with Mark Hamill for the Mandalorian. So where it was, they put it through this machine that mixes the voices and kind of like, because over the years, James Earl Jones, somehow his voice has got even deeper compared to the
so they compared make to the it Empire sound more like days. It used to.
Yeah, so they kind of, you know, made it a bit
balanced
higher.
Balanced it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought it sounded, that's another thing, that the voice just took me right back to the Empire Strikes Back.
But here's another thing, like Obi-Wan ran a second time and then Vader just like popped out of nowhere and striked, which we have seen him do sometimes. So maybe he does know how to sneak around a little bit.
Yeah, there was a couple of issues because he exited stage right, Obi-Wan, and then he came back from the wrong side somehow. Like, I don't know if they reversed the...
Because he has to be cool when people see. He goes off and then he quickly runs around.
I just walked here.
What? And so then he goes, the years have made you weak. And that was pretty good. And then, yeah, like you said, Eric, he kind of was just toying with him and force pushed him away. I guess we went through all
of that. But the lightsaber battle, which I praise, not the last one we see, but really reminded me of...
Yeah. No, it won't be.
Really reminded me of the New Hope one, where it was just, you know, in the original series, they kind of treated lightsabers as two-handed heavy swords, and so they had weight to them and bashing, rather than the sabers that they had in the prequels, that were a lot of moving around. But the lightsabers felt heavy and had impact, and so there wasn't the dancing around that they did in the prequels. But you know, it was a really brutal lightsaber battle. It was almost like hitting with an axe, almost.
Right. Yeah.
That's one thing. Yeah, they really had different styles throughout the movies, and I really loved the lightsaber battles in the prequels when I first saw them. But now they seem a bit choreographed, and I think that is one thing the sequels did pretty well: the lightsaber fights. All right, what's next, Jonathan?
Let's see. Let's go to Empire Chills. When we went to the Inquisitor's underwater lair on the moon of Ner, the Fortress Inquisitorius.
Inquisitorius.
So cool looking.
And it was just so Empire. You had the TIE fighters hanging from the roof like bats, and everyone in uniform, all the stormtroopers looking perfect, you know, all the Imperial officers wandering around. And just to note, if you find yourself in an army and you have the coolest uniforms and the best looking equipment, I think that you are the bad guys.
And you know what else I loved about that? Just the whole scene looked so cool. And I noticed the music there, and I have a little clip of it. It reminded me a little bit of the Imperial March, but it was pretty powerful. Here we go.
Cool. Look, with the music, it's just such a Star Wars thing to have a broken down version of the main themes to indicate where you are, and in that instead of like dun 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 dun, they just had the dun dun dun, which is a definite callback to the Imperial March.
Yeah, I liked how all the stormtroopers and all the officers saluted her as she walked through, just letting you know that she's one of the head honchos there. Thought that was cool.
And that tower or that fortress, apparently, I haven't played through it, but was first seen in Jedi Fallen Order, which is a recent game that's gotten a lot of praise.
And they say that the Fortress Inquisitorius is where they take the younglings to torture and to convert them into the dark side. And it was just a place of... where they took it, so it was just so Empire, and it was just very cool, very Star Wars again, and beautifully done.
And you go into their little throne room area. I don't know if you guys noticed all the lightsabers in the background. They in their room with the Inquisitor's chair, there were lightsabers lying along the edge.
Oh, really? No,
of the room. That. And there were a lot of them. There were a lot of them. So they've done their fair share of hunting.
But even the detail to the sea life swimming by
out
the window. It's just really well done.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and so I just love getting all the Empire vibes from this. And even though they're the bad guys, they're the best bad guys in cinema.
Yeah. Eric?
So I wanted to talk about Reva and when she saw that Jedi crest
Oh yeah.
And I just feel like there's something more to that, to her, and that was, I feel like, a big moment for her when she was either thinking about her past or what she was doing. I just thought that that was important, an important moment. What do you guys think?
I mean, if she was a Padawan,
I think we all accept that that was her in the opening scene.
I suspect it, but yeah, I don't think
I thought that it was, but probably, obviously they haven't officially said it, but it makes
Jen
sense.
R on her,
yeah. R right. Hi, my name is.
But the fact that she saw that and had such a powerful reaction to it.
Well, I mean, what I maybe you're right. You very well could be, but I just thought, okay, she's a Jedi hunter, and she's just discovered that there's this safe house where Jedi are being transported to safety, and it pissed her off, you know.
Yeah.
And it made me also think, wow, if you had this safe house in a place like this with a lot of innocent, probably poor people around, even if they didn't know about it, it would be dangerous for them to have it there because the Empire might just kill everyone around there just to make a point, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then how many more of them are there? And like, you know, how, you know, she may have been thinking, how big a movement is this? You know, just when we think we're getting to the end of it and where there's only the dregs of the Jedi left, as they said, then perhaps there's a whole movement and there's a whole, you know, hundreds of Jedis that we don't know about and all these Force-sensitive children that are being rescued and saved.
It's job security if she wants to look on the bright side.
Right, yeah. I do think that she's a really good tracker. You know, she kind of conveniently walks into the first place she finds, and she's like, "Oh, what's this over here? The secret door. Oh, look at this. There's the handle."
Yeah.
But again, I think that she has
Force sensitive.
Right. Right.
Well, that's just like Obi-Wan in last episode. He goes to a planet and he's like, "I'm looking for this little girl." Oh, okay. She's probably in this building.
Right.
On an entire planet.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But that's what I think it is just like these planets are just, they, although they are planets, so they're in the sense of a place, so they're just, it's all very small. That's why they only have one environment on each planet, because although it's a planet, it maybe is just a city or a town or a location.
Yeah, it's treated like that.
You know, at the same time, I mean, you can say that you know, she just has this Force sensitive, you know, where she can kind of tell where they've kind of come or walked or traveled through, which makes her a great hunter.
Yeah, well, we see Kenobi sense Vader, so she could have walked past there and sensed Kenobi had just.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. But finding that was awesome.
Yeah, that was another thing I liked when Vader was walking down, and then when he sensed Kenobi, he stepped back for a second and then started fucking everybody up.
Yeah. Oh, and there was that moment when Obi-Wan first saw Vader and he held his breath, and then Vader stopped in the middle of the street and stopped breathing. And that lack of sound was even more intimidating than his sound.
It was all played so well.
Yeah. Very, very cool. Satisfying.
Yeah. Okay, my turn?
Sure.
Yeah. I want to talk about the brotherly relationship between Anakin and Obi-Wan, which we talked about already, how if you watch the Clone Wars, it takes on a lot more depth and makes it more tragic and ominous to see them meet up now that Anakin's changed to Darth Vader. But speaking of brothers, we learn a little bit more about Obi-Wan's early life. Leia's saying, "Sometimes I try to imagine what my father was like," and then her father comes to see her, so it's so nice. But then Obi-Wan, "I know that feeling. As a Jedi, we're taken from our families when we're very young," which I've always thought is so fucked up, and it makes the Jedi seem like a cult, and it reminds me of Grogu. But then he says he got flashes of his mother's shawl and his father's hands, and he remembers a baby, and he thinks he had a brother. That's all new. And maybe that'll come back. But I was thinking, you know, maybe I'm overthinking it a little bit, but it makes sense. If he lost a brother, that maybe he'd like subconsciously have been searching for a new brother, and Anakin filled that role, and then it's even more tragic and heartbreaking that he lost yet another brother.
Yeah.
And also I read in the original Star Wars novelization that Obi-Wan's brother was Owen Lars.
Oh.
But I don't think that's considered canon at all.
Yeah.
And I forgot. I always have to remind myself, but Owen is related to Luke because Owen's father married Anakin's mother, Shmi.
Yes.
So Owen and Anakin are stepbrothers, and Owen is like Luke's step-uncle, I guess. Just calls him Uncle Owen, so they're not related by blood.
But still, you don't want to hide the hope of the universe with their known family with the same names.
Maybe relocate, consider.
Well, considering that the stormtroopers were like, hey, you Jedi-looking guy, have you seen a Jedi around here?
They usually have robes on. Yeah. Like those ones you're wearing.
Right.
No, we're looking for him in this completely deserted desert.
Right.
You're the only one here. Maybe you ran into him.
Maybe you saw him. That's worth it, because we're really good at fighting him. No, come on. There's got to be a lot of people around there.
But then, but then that led to that moment of the mistaking of the name. And then you know, Obi-Wan looks to Leia and says, she reminds me of her mother. Mm. And that was, you know, a very touching moment and actually brought the heart right back into it. And again, that's what I love about this. Just when you think you're just watching... you're watching TV, you're suddenly watching Star Wars, and it all means a lot.
and picturing Natalie Portman.
Yeah.
You don't realize that it took a toll on him as well. You know, that Anakin was obviously devastated, but so was he.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were close. Padme and Obi-Wan.
Maybe too close.
Right. They're here to kill me. Well, that's what I want to bring up is just I want to go quickly over how Anakin and Obi-Wan split, just to remind people. Because Padme was pregnant and Anakin was excited about that, but he kept having dreams of Padme dying in childbirth and thought it could be prophetic, so he wanted to prevent it. And then what he did ultimately actually made it come to pass, which is very Greek tragedy. Mm. But Palpatine tempted him to the dark side by telling him that it could provide ways of preventing death / saving Padme's life. That was really what was driving him. Mm. So, and then he was also, Palpatine was convincing him that the Jedi were against him because they had refused to make him a master. And then he decided to go to the dark side and learn how to prevent Padme's death. And Palpatine dubbed him Darth Vader and then issued Order 66. And Anakin went and helped exterminate the Jedi, presumably killing all those Padawans, though they didn't show it, thankfully. And then Obi-Wan finds out that Anakin went to the dark side. And I think he went to Padme to try to find Anakin and told her what was going on. And she wouldn't tell him where he was, I think, but she went off to see him on Mustafar, and then Obi-Wan stowed away on her ship. And so when he sees Obi-Wan there, he thinks that Padme and Obi-Wan are conspiring against him and they're going to kill him. And he starts raging and he accidentally hurts Padme, I think, with the Force.
He chokes Obi-Wan. He choked her. Yeah.
I forgot. And she passed out, right?
Yeah.
And he blamed Obi-Wan, and then they had that like 40-minute battle. And then Obi-Wan, that's when he chopped his arms and legs off and left him for dead, burning. And then Palpatine found him and took him back and fixed him up as Darth Vader. And Padme died in childbirth, and it said she died of a broken heart, but it might have had something to do, I was thinking, with that Force choke. Who knows? And then Anakin, now in his Vader getup, finds out Padme's dead and says no, and I think he probably blames Obi-Wan for it.
Mm.
So that was their split. And one thing too we didn't talk about, but at one point Obi-Wan looks across the plane and sees, I guess, a vision of Anakin, and it's actually, you know, Hayden Christensen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I hope somehow they'll do something where they can actually have them talk in that form.
Yeah. I was thinking that too, that they have to. I mean, because, you know, they made such a big deal about him coming back, and for him to just be, you know, in a back to tank with a mask on, and you just see his eyes. And
James Earl Jones.
And James Earl Jones voice, and presumably somebody else walking in, you know, in the costume.
No, I think it's him in the costume.
Mm. I thought that I heard that
you read not
both that there's there's he does it sometimes, and then some other dude.
Right.
But either way, I mean,
whenever it looks like dun dun dun, that's him.
That's him. There you go.
But I think there might be some flashbacks to come or something. Mm. But I would love to see a scene of Obi-Wan and Anakin, you know, pre Vader, where they're just talking, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or I mean, I don't know if they could do this, but some kind of like. Not forced ghost versions of them, but just more like the pure versions of them talk. Yeah. So that it can be current, but it's still Hayden Christensen made whole somehow talking to him. You know, that'd be cool.
Yeah. And speaking of forced ghosts, there's the Qui-Gon Jinn. And like, he keeps reaching out for inspiration and support, and he still hasn't come. And I assume that at some point we will... have the contact with Qui-Gon and
he has to show up, right?
Yeah. I mean, they've been touching on it too much,
right for it not to pay off,
which would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, Liam Neeson. Okay, Jonathan.
All right, I wanted to talk about the music and the sound of the series so far. It's so great to have John Williams' soundtrack back in it, even though it's, you know, he rewrote a new Obi-Wan theme, and just as when Obi-Wan ignited his lightsaber, which was another incredible shot when the whole thing went blue, you heard in the background a light version of the Obi-Wan theme, which was fantastic, and then all the wonderful sound effects from the lightsabers themselves to the vacuum seal of the helmet, and when the probe droid came in, and the blah, 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 like hearing that, this brings back all those Star Wars feelings again, and it's not just X-wings and lightsabers, but it's the music, it's the sound effects, and they're all so special and give such a sense of where you are and what you're watching. Mm-hmm. And the hats off to the people that are doing the score, because I know it's not all John Williams, but the people that are doing have done a fantastic job. And it's not exactly the full orchestral Star Wars thing, but I think it's the tension that's been bringing to it has been fantastic. So just sound effects and music has really just rounds out the whole Star Wars feeling
for sure.
I mean, one of the great things about Star Wars is it makes you feel like you're actually just transported to another place.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things as a kid that I felt like, holy shit. And the sound has so much to do with that, I think. And if you watch any like making of Star Wars, you'll see Ben Burtt, who's like the father of all of that, and showing how if you hit a hammer against like a telephone wire, it'll go
stuff like that. You know, George Lucas, I think, said that you know, sound is 50% of your experience, and you know, they just pulled it. It's just so amazing. You know, all the sounds are just so Star Wars. I don't know if you know, but on Disney they have sounds of Star Wars, and you can go and just listen to, and it'll be ships and it'll be laser blasts or something. Yeah, and I've turned that on cool. And it's just awesome. And in this episode, it just makes you that much more invested.
Yeah.
You can hear the sounds of everyone Vader's making suffer.
I saw an interview with George Lucas, and he talked about Star Wars being a silent film, and where there wasn't a lot of dialogue, but it was the music and the sound effects and all of that helped tell the story. If you know the soundtrack, and as you pointed out earlier, Jason, with the Imperial March, there are little stings of all the famous themes that keep coming up to give you a hint of what to come, what's to come. So there's storytelling with just the music.
Yeah, without exactly. Anyone saying anything.
Yeah. Cool. And you mentioned when Obi-Wan first ignited his blade and there was that blue glow illuminating his face. And that reminded me, too, that another thing that was great about the Obi-Wan Darth Vader confrontation was it was all in the dark. So that it was more moody and scary. But also it really put the focus on the two of them because you couldn't see anything else hardly. You know? And that worked really well, I thought.
And yeah, and the red and the blue glow when the lightsabers clashed. It was so vibrant.
Mace Windu is coming back.
Those colors together, you know, are usually don't go well, and they use that in other films. They call it the hot cold effect, and the red and blue just makes you almost feel uncomfortable. But at the same time, you know, they're good against evil and all that kind of coming together.
I felt uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and every poster has a balance of blue and red on it. For all the Star Wars films. But a friend mentioned to me it was like they are obviously using practical effects with the lightsabers because they gave off their own light and it gave off their own light onto the actors. And so none of that looked very CG. So every time they fought and clashed, it just gave such a feeling of realism with these practical lightsabers, with the mixing of the light and especially in the darkness, as you mentioned, it just made everything more.
Yeah, very cool. Eric?
Obi-Wan mentioning Quinlan Voss, I thought that was really super cool. I mean, again, if you've watched the Clone Wars, he's another, you know, powerful Jedi and...
a rule breaker, kind of a maverick.
Yeah, right. I went back and watched the episode that he was in, and I just remember it being so cool. And I found out, you know, doing a little more research that he had a bigger role planned and that they had a whole storyline for him, but that got cut short because, you know, they canceled Clone Wars. But just mentioning...
But it was in a novel.
Oh, did it?
He put it in a novel instead. So I think he becomes Dooku's apprentice for a while and goes over to the dark side, but then comes back or something.
Yeah. Which is, makes it even more compelling. And it's just cool to know that they're mentioning these other Jedi out there. And exactly. I mean, just the fact that he mentions him just, let you know that there are other cool Jedis out there.
Yeah, maybe we'll see like a group of these Jedi that are fleeing or whatever at some point.
Yeah, I thought that the episode where he shows up in the Clone Wars, you know, him and Obi-Wan take on Cad Bane.
Right.
It was a pretty awesome fight where they're jumping over these spear or these little, you know, pillars. And it was awesome. But it was really cool to know that they have potentially other Jedi stories to follow.
Mm-hmm. So far, I like Cad Bane live action in Boba Fett better than Grand Inquisitor in Obi-Wan.
Not
the Grand Inquisitor is horrible, but just Cad Bane was so great in that.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about some things about the Force. I thought that Leia, the actress, has been really good in this, and I think this was my favorite episode of hers. And I liked that exchange when she was saying, when are we going to get there? And can't you make it go faster using the Force? And, it doesn't work that way. And then she goes, how does it work? Like, what does it feel like? And I'm like, that's a good question. I want to know that.
Yeah. I was going to say I've thought about the Force a lot over the years, but I'd never – thought to ask, how does it feel? And so when she asked that, I'm just like, that's a really good question.
Yeah. How does it feel? And his answer was great too. He said, have you ever been afraid of the dark? And she nodded. How does it feel when you turn on the lights? I feel safe. Yes, it feels like that. And I thought, oh, that is so nice. Like, it makes the Force feel even more appealing. And it's also interesting given that I think Obi-Wan has lost his connection with the Force right now. And that's why.
I felt like he didn't believe that.
Yeah.
He said it, but he didn't believe it.
I think he believes it, but I think he's lost his connection with the Force.
And that's why
And that's why in Star Wars, he seems very connected to the Force, and he also seems centered and calm and at peace. I mean, even when he's about to die with Darth Vader, he's like, fine, go ahead and kill me. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm going to be more powerful than you could imagine. But I think he'll reconnect with the Force over the course of this series.
Well, I feel like he's already starting to, because his blaster accuracy was much better.
It was on point.
Single shot kills, whereas like he was battling on that rooftop with the lizard guy for a little too long. I'm like, can you just focus the force and just put a shot?
Right.
It's weird just to see him firing a gun.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
That didn't occur to me until just now, but I was like, something's off here. That's what it was.
And look, with Obi-Wan, it's sad to see how far he's fallen. And I hope this will mirror a redemption for him, because it's hard to imagine him that over all those years that he didn't continue with his training. I mean, you know, what else is there to do in that cave while he's watching?
Exactly.
And I think that you know, he was always a gentleman and had dignity, and that there was only so far a Jedi could fall. But obviously the heartbreak of Anakin turning to the dark side and killing all the Jedi is just broken to him and severed his connection to the Force. And it was only the thought of Leia dying that he managed to dig deep down into himself and to make a connection with it and save it. So I feel like he's slowly rebuilding that, and hope we have a scene of seeing Obi-Wan in his full glory again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's coming. So. You know,
but
it's coming.
I mean, I always try to look at things from different points of view, as Obi-Wan himself would say is a good thing. And, you know, like from Uncle Owen's point of view, he's a huge menace. And the Jedi really did fuck up big time. Yeah. And if I was Obi-Wan and I'd been like, wow, everything I believed in, we got duped, and this guy I trained is now the most evil person. Maybe I should just give up this Force stuff. You know, I could totally see him.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, you know, but that's not what we want for him.
Yeah.
But when he describes the Force to Leia as, you know, turning the lights on and feeling safe, it reminded me of when he described the Force to Luke, where he says it's what gives the Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and permeates us. It binds the galaxy together. Which is kind of cool. You got to tell both siblings about it.
Yeah.
Right.
But that was what a scene that was in the original one, sitting there, you know, with Obi-Wan in his cave and just explaining the Force and, you know, going back to that, you know, young boy in the cinema. It was just like, oh, where can I get an Obi-Wan? I need an Obi-Wan.
And then you look back and Luke's like looking right down the shaft of his lightsaber.
Yeah. What's this?
How do you turn this on? And then sort of tangentially related, but also about the Force is, he's trying to commune with Qui-Gon Jinn's spirit. And Qui-Gon Jinn was the first Jedi to learn how to become a Force ghost, or to become one with the Force after death. So that's not like a long time Jedi thing. It's relatively new. And in Revenge of the Sith, I think Yoda said he'd train Obi-Wan to communicate with him. And so then in Star Wars, you know, after this, all of what I just said was before this series, but after this, Obi-Wan says to Vader, if you strike me down, I'll become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. I mean, we presume that means he'll become one with the Force, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not that powerful. He can just kind of talk to Luke, but
run.
I feel like he's going to learn to do that in this series, you know, maybe Qui-Gon will teach him or something. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Next, Jonathan.
Okay, so I just would like to bring up the final battle again, and there were some problems with it, but it was great to see, and like even with a wall of fire, I still feel that Vader should have been able to have force jumped over it, or when the mech droid was picking up Obi-Wan, surely Darth Vader could have reached out with him and just lifted them both over.
Yeah, pull them over
in front of them. But like maybe it was a big Game of Thrones and they'd written themselves into a corner, and the only solution was to kind of ignore the inconsistency.
That's kind of what it felt like to me a little bit. Yeah. But I like your explanation that he's all right, I'm going to let him go off and sweat for a little while and then come and finish him off later or something.
Like it was almost beneath him to bother with him anymore.
Right.
He hadn't realized how far Kenobi had fallen, and And it just like, this is the person that I've been obsessed with all these years. He's just mm-hmm. been nothing now, you know? Mm-hmm. And then there's that great scene of the great shot of Vader with the flames in reflecting in the eyes of his helmet. Eyes. Yeah. But it was awesome moment.
And I don't know, maybe this is obvious and doesn't even bear saying, but I mean, Ewan McGregor got to play Obi-Wan through three movies, but never fight Darth Vader. So this is the first time.
Yeah, that's
pretty
true.
Cool.
Yeah. I think that's important. I think that, the moment we see him see Vader is powerful. The moment that they clash, lightsabers together.
Mm. Yeah.
Powerful.
It was, this movie was, I think, going to have Darth Maul as the villain.
Right.
And I think it was during the rewrite that they said, no, just go full bore. Yeah. What Vader. Do people really want to see the most?
Yeah.
Duke Vader, yeah.
Well, that's what I think, that they have, they have lost their fear of being obvious. And like, I want to see Vader in full flight. I think it was that moment in Rogue One, the reaction universally from the fandom when when we see Vader in his full ability, just taking down rebel soldiers with every force move, with his lightsaber, force choke, a neck snap here,
pulling the guns away, and
and then people like Vader. Okay.
But that's the thing, all these characters. I know, Rich, wanted to see Luke. Use all of his powers and we want to see all of them, their full potential and be the badasses that they are.
Yeah. I've loved all the stuff with Luke in Mandalorian and Boba Fett.
Yeah. Yeah.
So great.
And that like, it's funny because after that moment of Luke coming to rescue Grogu and all of them, which is one of the great Star Wars moment, and very much moved me as you guys remember.
Yeah.
But ever since then, I feel like I'm okay now. Like if anything after this is just a bonus. I've seen Luke in his full flight then. And so I've lost being picky and demanding because, the idea of real Star Wars has been recognized. And so now, we just continually, if we get a great Star Wars moment, I'm appreciative of it. If it's a little too modern or a little off, I don't mind so much anymore because I think they made up for the disrespect that Luke Skywalker was given when he tossed the lightsaber over his shoulder. And that, for me, that was one of the most insulting moments in all of cinema. I took it so personally. But then they took them to come back and show Luke at the peak of his powers and a true Jedi. And now we see Vader at the peak of his powers and we're seeing real Kenobi. It's just great. It's a great time to be a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, for sure.
I had been wondering at the end of Force Awakens, Rey goes to the island where Luke is, and this big, supposed to be dramatic moment where she goes to hand him the lightsaber and then they cut right there. And I just don't like J.J. Abrams. And I was like, man, this seems really dumb. And Luke, why didn't they have Mark Hamill in this movie? Is he still a good actor or is he going to be any good? Like, what's the problem? So then that first scene when he threw it over his shoulder, I was like, I love this already. That's how I felt. But will say, once the movie was done and I had time to sit with it, I don't like how he went out anymore.
No.
But we don't want to dwell on that too much. If there's one more thing you want to say. Yeah, okay.
No. It was like you had mentioned in the last podcast, the idea of having Star Wars, and there was a line in that you pointed out to me from a YouTube spot that said Star Wars means something to people, and I think that's one of the most important things because it does mean something to people, and then to have these Hollywood directors just using it as their own personal kind of playground, and where they're battling each other and they're insulting each other without having respect for the source material in the way that, say, Peter Jackson did with the Lord of the Rings. The one purpose was to not bring their personal agendas into that film, whereas I feel with the sequels, it was just so... It was so personal for the people that made it, rather yeah. than giving respect to the original yeah. source material.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, Eric, do you have another point?
You know what? I think we covered everything.
Okay, I'm going to talk about Leia, who is a great liar and saves them both.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny because Obi-Wan was like, "You're my daughter and you don't talk." I can't talk or yeah. I don't like to talk. You don't talk. Okay, got it. And then she flags down the guy with the transport, the mole guy, yeah. and immediately starts making up a story about, what did she say? We got lost in this field, yeah. whatever. And then the stormtroopers get on and she says they're visiting where they lost her mother. And then, yeah, you mentioned that scene. I guess I won't repeat it, but yeah, it was a poignant moment that evoked Padme, where, you know, he said he thinks about her mother. And then she says, you knew my real mother, didn't you? And he goes, it's just a story. And some listeners have mentioned that in Return of the Jedi, Luke asked Leia if she remembered her mother. And she said, just a little bit. She died when I was very young. I just have images, really feelings. And they're like, well, how can that be when we're seeing Leia with her mother at 10 years old? And I'm like, no, she's talking about her biological mother. Padme, yeah. which is also Padme. Luke's mother. Yeah, not her yeah. Alderaanian stepmom. That's why. But that does beg the question, how can she even remember feelings when now we saw in Revenge of the Sith, separated immediately after being born? But maybe it's like a force thing or something. Mm. Or this one YouTuber I love, Ryan Airy, Screen Crush, he thinks maybe Obi-Wan in the series will share some visions of Padme with Leia through the force, and then quote will make more sense. You know, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Be kind of cool.
Yeah, but it's funny because we treat it like history, but these were just films that were made, you know. They had no idea that there was going to be a Kenobi series. In
Right. Every little thing can't match up.
Yeah. Too,
over 40 years or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm glad they try, you know, and what's fun about podcasting and listening to podcasts is your own headcanon and your own kind of theories of everything and trying to make everything fit and to make it feel real. And you know, because the more you put into it, the more you get out of it, I guess.
Sure. I mean, in my opinion, I'm glad they try too. That's so important. And also it's fun to connect all the little dots. But you got to, in my opinion, be a little loose about it and have a sense of humor. And not get super pissed off if everything doesn't line up.
Doesn't line up perfectly.
But I will go back to the line of why, well, we all know that there's going to be another confrontation, but the reason why I know there will is because when Darth Vader and Obi-Wan meet in A New Hope, he goes, you were the master and I was but the student the last time we met, or something along those lines. So they did part with that relationship where Obi-Wan was on top of Darth Vader the last time he saw each other.
So you think that's how it's going to be to make that line make sense? Yeah. That's another line that people bring up.
Oh,
it doesn't make sense anymore. And I'm like, they might have to just say, oh, well, on that one.
But I think Obi-Wan will rediscover the Force, will reconnect for it, and in some way have another battle with Vader and defeat him.
He has to, right? Yeah. I mean, he wouldn't be as, you know, in touch with the Force as he is from A New Hope if he doesn't. Yeah. I mean, he's, again, fallen too far for him not to be able to redeem.
And as he, like, whips Vader's ass, he'll say, I'm taking you to school, boy, just so everyone knows that he's the master. Yeah. And Leia still realizes that Obi-Wan is lying to her about something, and I wasn't sure what that was, but then I'm like, oh, well, I guess that, you know, her father was that he killed her father and took her from her mother. And
your dad's really evil. No, he kind of wiped out half the universe. But, you know, apart from that,
I've been totally honest. And then at the end, I'm just talking Leia stuff, like Revan. Is that how you say it? I forget now. Looks like about ready to capture.
Oh yeah.
Reva.
Yeah.
About ready to capture Leia. Leia ran off, but she killed the
well,
person.
Well, maybe she can run away again and dodge her.
Right. And she'll go,
that'll be all crawl under episode. Something. Can't catch me.
Oh, God. Just grab her.
I know.
I wanted
but
to
it's
talk
the Force. It's obviously the Force.
A little bit about this Tala character and the path. So, you know, the Jedi are being hunted by these Inquisitors, but it's not just them that the Jedi need to worry about. The Empire has other supporters, like this mole man guy, Freck, who gives them a ride. Yeah. He has an Imperial symbol on his truck, and he's saying, you know, oh, good people out there, they pay their way, listen to the Empire. And it made me think, you know, in the real world, people support bad governments and regimes all the time, like the Nazis or this is really a parallel to, I think, when people in the South supported slavery and this whole network of safe houses. And they take the Jedi to this planet called Jabim or something where they get new identities. Mm-hmm. So it's basically best quality vacuum from Breaking Bad. But it's like the Underground Railroad from the 1800s where slaves were taken in these secret routes and network of safe houses to find freedom.
I kind of thought it was interesting that Freck, you know, when the stormtroopers say that they're looking for a Jedi, he gets scared and says, oh, are we in danger? They've been totally, you know, lied to that the Jedi were evil.
Oh, yeah. That's what all the media, the state-run media is saying.
Right.
That the Jedi conspired against the government and they're evil and need to be exterminated, for sure. And I'm sure, I mean, just from living today, where I think people are crazy for believing things and they think I'm crazy, we know that happens, you know?
Right, yeah. Right.
The Empire is very polarizing.
Yeah, and a lot of bad things have been done in the name of safety and comfort as well.
That
we'll
too.
We'll look after you. You know, don't worry. Just trust us.
Yes, absolutely. And the way that Obi-Wan found out that this woman was a supporter, this Imperial officer who's actually helping Jedi escape, Tala, you know, he's getting scanned by this probe droid and he's like, oh, no good. So start shooting up the stormtroopers. Pretty great little action sequence. One of them fell on that laser gate and got chopped right
now. Oh, that was fantastic.
Wilhelm scream.
I like that they're not being too Disney, you know?
Right,
like,
People
are being sliced chopping in half, hands are coming off.
You know?
I think it's like, it's like a prerequisite that a limb or something has to get cut off, right?
And so this, he shoots all of them, and then this another transport comes up with the Imperial officer and a few troopers, and then she shoots them all and tells him to come on. And I'm like, is that the standard procedure for her? Just roll up on your transport, kill all the stormtroopers, take the Jedi.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Time. Oh, I lost another crew. Sorry.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what happened to them. You know?
They ran off.
Well, if they're as smart as the guys that were looking for the Jedi, maybe that's how it goes, right?
But I do love the outer rim stormtroopers. You know, compared to the ones that were at the Inquisitor's lair, were all super clean, you know, like the
shiny.
The outer rim ones are all a bit dirty and messed up and a bit casual and a bit slumped in their seats and everything. You know, they're just good. Like.
Yeah. And there was a female one too. I mean, I don't know if you noticed that, but I was watching with subtitles and it was female stormtrooper, and I'm like, oh, hey, cool.
Yeah. And is that the first female stormtrooper that we've had?
I can't remember.
That's no good. Females can't be. another point, Reva and the Inquisitors, great band. She tells Vader, you know, Obi-Wan will pay for the Grand Inquisitors, and then Vader interrupts. But it seems like she was going to frame Obi-Wan for his death, and he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is like, another maybe red flag for her. Yeah. But he says, prove yourself and the position of Grand Inquisitor is yours. And then he also says, fail me and you will not live to regret it. So that's Vader's carrot and stick management style, promotion or death.
But I also thought that was interesting when she tells Brother Five that she had spoken with him, and he thought that
He's
was
jealous.
Strange that she had spoken to him personally. Yeah. So again, I think there's something more there.
It's all to me, I mean, on the surface, I think you're probably right. There is something more, but on the surface, it's all like office politics with dark side force added in.
Right,
so
right.
It turning into a nightmare, you know?
Right.
Everybody wants the promotion. They want to look good for the boss.
Right, and, right.
Yeah.
Standing around the TIE fighter, you know, chatting about the other people.
When Vader, you know, first lands on the planet and the Inquisitors are there, he kind of lowers his head. I mean, I know it was just a slight thing, but Reva didn't. I mean, she stood there.
But I've been loving the fifth brother. I think he's been a great character
and
has all the resonance and he really is a great character and you can feel his brutality and his evil I look forward to
seeing more. Yeah. I like him.
Yeah. And I mean the whole idea that what's most important to them is increasing their power and influence and all that is very dark side, you know?
Yeah.
That sort of makes sense.
There's not a lot of room for a promotion though, because the sister can only be two women.
Right. You know.
Yeah.
That's hella competition.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that's part of why there can only be two, because they know that when you dabble in the dark side, you're going to try to kill everyone who's more powerful than you. So they try to manage it as well as they can.
Exactly. Sorry.
Same reason why Legion of Doom never works out, because the Joker always like backstabs Lex Luthor. Okay, getting into some lore and references. Freck the Mole Man, he was voiced by Zach Braff from Scrubs.
That's who it was.
The chalk drawings in the safe house, there was the Jedi Order symbol. There was, you know, the names of Jedi that had passed through. A few were from this book, Children of the Jedi, that I think is not canon, but now that their names are on there, maybe they're canon.
They again.
Valen Halcyon, Rogonda Ismarin, and Jyn Altus. And then he mentions Quinlan Voss. And the note said, only when the eyes are closed can you truly see, which seems very Jedi, because when Luke was in the Death Star getting ready to shoot the torpedoes, did he, like, close his eyes?
He didn't
use
his
off the computer.
Yeah, he
turned
off the computer. So he was basically shooting blind.
Yeah. And before that, he's training with the remote in the Millennium Falcon, and the face shield is down so you can't see it. And Obi-Wan says, your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them. And then there's Kanan Jarrus in Rebels.
I was hoping that he would have said his name on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that
maybe the Ahsoka series.
I think so.
It looks like they're really going to follow up on a lot of Rebel stuff on that.
Yeah. But then saying that, the Grand Inquisitor is alive
in
Rebels. And that's 5 years later, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so I don't know whether where they're breaking canon. Because it seems like he's dead, not Star Wars dead.
Right, you know? Right. Well, I mean, they can fix everybody, right? So, but at the same time, I mean, he's definitely not around.
It's such a huge continuity error that
it really is.
I think he's either not dead, or when you become Grand Inquisitor, you get morphed or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe.
Because the one in Rebels is the same marking, different shaped head, but it's the same guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's 5 years into the future. And, you know, that's kind of Dave Filoni's baby, Rebels. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, it would be very odd if the Grand Inquisitor is gone.
Right.
And they don't explain it.
But it seems
he
is. Yeah.
Because I don't think Dave Filoni's like, oh, wait a minute. He was one of the stars of that series. Wait a second. A few more quick things. The planet Mapuzo has not been seen before. Seems to be based on the American Southwest. The loader droid, Ned B, was never... We haven't seen them before.
It was cool that he looked like the super tactical droid. I like that how they tie little things to the Clone Wars even more. Yeah.
Like maybe it's the same company or something.
And there is a rumor about him that he is actually a clone trooper.
Oh.
In a droid
armor
costume. Well,
the way he was holding that hammer.
Yeah, the way he was holding that hammer.
Yeah.
And I saw somewhere where there was a close up of the leg armor, which were actually clone trooper
armor. Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And so then gripping that hammer, I'm like, that is not something a droid would do, especially a loaded droid.
Right.
I've heard rumor.
Rumors.
It's unconfirmed.
But you heard it here first. I mean, not sort of.
From someone else.
Right.
And the Imperial probe droids, we see them launched out of the Inquisitor's fortress, right?
Yeah.
We've seen them in Empire Strikes Back on Hoth floating around or different places, but we've never seen them launched and out into space like that. That was pretty cool.
And I just love the getting back to they have the best uniforms, the flamboyance of the Empire. It's like, rather than just launching those droids out a door or something, they come shooting out of the peak of the building, and just the grand scale of everything. I'm like in my head, I just think they must be able to just automatically build things with droids or whatever, because there seems to be no restrictions on height or space, and everything is just so big, you know?
Yeah. Don't forget to add the probe droid launch tubes. Yeah.
And my last note is, I just thought it was sweet that Obi-Wan fixed Leia's little droid.
Lola.
Yeah.
Any other random notes, Eric or Jonathan?
I think we covered.
Yep, I'm through.
Okay, that was great. We will take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It's time for some news. ET Canada talked with Hayden Christensen. They asked if he would consider doing a Darth Vader standalone series. He says, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think this is a character that sort of resonates in our culture in a very kind of profound way, and there's certainly more there to explore. There are so many other stories that have been told in these other mediums. I would love to get to continue my journey with him. I mean, the comic, the Darth Vader comic's really good, so I agree. Mm. I think it'd be cool to see some more stuff with him. And there's rumors that Darth Vader might show up in the Ahsoka series, but that's later in the timeline after he's dead, so maybe not.
That's true.
Force Ghost, I don't know. I forgot to mention it last time, but they announced that Mandalorian season 3 is premiering in February 2023, February next year. And they've also confirmed there will be a fourth season.
That's
cool.
Yeah.
And they showed some early season 3 footage at Star Wars Celebration, but I don't even want to go through it because it's just kind of spoilery. And
yeah.
I'd rather just watch it. Rosario Dawson also showed up at Celebration to promote Ahsoka. She was joined by Chopper, the bad-tempered astromech droid from Rebels.
Oh, nice.
Who I guess is going to be in that, you know? Yeah. And there was Natasha Liu Bordizzo, who's playing Sabine Wren.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, great. Okay.
Right? Cool.
Yeah, so then, Kanan and those guys have to show up, right?
I mean, I'm debating how much to even tell, but it sounds like they're following up on a bunch of Rebel stuff. So that's pretty cool with characters and stuff. They talked about a new Willow show with Warwick Davis reprising his role from the 1998 really? Fantasy movie. There's a trailer. It looked pretty good.
Yeah.
There was a performance by John Williams, who is celebrating his 90th birthday this year.
Awesome.
I did not know he was that old. Harrison Ford came out and said, "We all know what John does musically. What you may not know and what I've come to appreciate is the warmth, the generosity, and the boyish spirit of this man. He's the most gracious man, the gentlest, kindest man, and a wonderful talent that we're all blessed with," which is really nice. And then he mentioned that Indiana Jones 5 is coming out next summer.
And they all booed?
No, I think it might be good, right? Can't be as bad as 4.
Better be.
Oh, man. It's just when you see him run, it's just difficult.
And then...
But of course I'll go and see it.
I think this is this next thing is good to just sort of publicize that the actress that plays Reva is Moses Ingram, and she posted screenshots of some pretty bad, like, racist messages she's been getting, like, you're a diversity hire and you won't be loved or remembered for this role, and calling her the N-word and all kinds of stuff like that. She says she's gotten hundreds of messages like this, and she wrote, "There's nothing anybody can do to stop this hate. I question what my purpose is in even being here in front of you saying that this is happening, but I think the thing that bothers me is this feeling that I've had inside myself, which no one else has told me, but this feeling of I just got to shut up and take it. I just got to grin and bear it, and I'm not built like that." So, Star Wars was, well, I don't know who this came from, but the Star Wars Twitter was really supportive of her, and they put out a video from Ewan McGregor responding to this, and I'll play the audio from that now. It's just a minute long.
This weekend, Star Wars fans made Obi-Wan Kenobi the most watched Disney Plus original series premiere of all time. And for that, I would say a big thank you. And it just goes to show what this family can do when we all pull together. However, it seems that some of the fan base from this influential fan base have decided to attack Moses Ingram online and send her the most horrendous racist DMs. And I heard some of them this morning and it just broke my heart. Moses is a brilliant actor. She's a brilliant woman. And she's absolutely amazing in this series. She brings so much to the series. She brings so much to the franchise. And it just sickened me to my stomach to hear that this had been happening. I just want to say, as the leading actor in the series, as the executive producer in the series, that we stand with Moses. We love Moses. And if you're sending her bullying messages, you're no Star Wars fan in my mind. There's no place for racism in this world. And, I totally stand with Moses.
I just thought that was pretty cool that he put that out there, you know, stood up for her.
Yeah, look, I agree. And I think what he said is absolutely right, that you are not a Star Wars fan. And I think that if you are a Star Wars fan and you're saying, writing in these comments, I mean, think you need to rethink your life.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like I know that these are happening, and because Hayden Christensen got not racial abuse but just abuse for years and years and years, and I just don't think that this is on Star Wars fans. There are people that have watched it and making these comments, but I think the fan base is very supportive and very diverse. And I think Star Wars has such universal appeal that anyone that makes these comments, I agree with Obi-Wan, that they're not Star Wars fans, and they're nothing to do with me, and I reject them totally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just think, unfortunately, the internet, as great as it is, has enabled and amplified bad behavior all around the world sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But let's get into some good behavior and fans that we love. Let's do some listener feedback. We'll go in order. Want to go first, Jonathan?
Yeah. Thank you for putting me first. Jinjo Puthia. And now that's a Jedi name if ever I've heard.
Right.
I hope I pronounce it correctly. Jujo Puthia, I loved it. Ended too quickly. Vader, can't wait, at least I hope, until Obi-Wan gets his head right.
Yeah. Let's see. Ben Woods writes, fantastic episode again. So tense, and Vader was so menacing. Reminded me of when I was young and terrified of him. Little Leia is amazing. She is stealing the show. Hopefully we get to see some Luke stuff soon. So awesome to hear James Earl Jones back as the voice. Thanks so much for an awesome, informative podcast. Great job.
I kind of wonder if we'll get to see any Luke stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't.
Yeah. You know? I mean, they've been focusing so much, right? It would be weird to transition at this point with only a few episodes left.
And Luke can't meet Obi-Wan until Star Wars.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Brian White says, I've never been afraid of Vader before, but the march through the town and then the fire scene, dang, that was intense.
For sure.
Okay, Shea Weld, very tense and brutal. Vader casually killing innocent people and then trying to torture Obi-Wan showed his nature before the original trilogy. Ben Shaw has lost a step since his Clone War days. I wonder how this could affect Vader and Obi-Wan's dialogue in A New Hope. And is the Grand Inquisitor dead? Can't believe I have to wait another week to see more.
Yeah, for sure.
I know. We got three up the first half in just a few days, and now we
have a couple of days. Now we have to wait. Damien Vital, I liked it, but was surprised we had a Vader and Obi-Wan encounter so soon in the series. There's a little bit of me that still feels a fight now in the timeline takes away from their final meeting in A New Hope, but maybe that will pass. Looking back on their fight on the Death Star, with as far as we've progressed with lightsaber battles, it does leave a little to be desired. Little Leia is stealing the show.
Jonathan, have you ever seen that reimagined fight with Vader and Obi-Wan from Star Wars?
I have. Yeah. That is great. I mean, awesome. I love the original, but just to see what you could do with that original footage and up the danger and the aggression. Yeah, I thought it was very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Sometimes it's hard not to think about that when you see them fighting.
Yeah.
I loved it.
My turn, right? Sherry Morford says, as someone who's loved Princess Leia since I was a little girl, when Tala said she'll make a good fighter one day, I might have teared up a bit. I just love getting this picture into young Leia's life. She was a fighter and a rebel from day one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Alicia Stout. I remember being so excited to know that Hayden Christensen was going to be in this series. And then after beginning to watch this episode, I realized, wait, he's Vader now. So we're not actually going to see him in his human form, lols. Then we got a small glimpse of him in his robes on the mining planet. So maybe that's how we get to see him. Also, I'm totally digging that they brought back James Earl Jones for Vader's voice. Oh, and did anyone catch that Tala was Ilaria San from Game of Thrones? Oh, that's who it was. Mm-hmm. Need to go and rewatch this one. And hey, you guys finally got your lightsaber fight.
Yep.
More to come, hopefully.
Yep.
Penny Lennox writes, I said the other day that sassy princess has a mind of her own and gets into trouble needing rescue is a trope. But upon further reflection, Princess Leia is the OG sassy princess. She created it. I don't know what you call a trope when it goes full circle like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Alma Contreras says, yes, Vader versus Ben. Totally was not expecting this first confrontation yet, but man, it was awesome. Was it awesome or what? Oh, shoot. Reva about to nab Leia. Oh, my God. This episode ended way too fast. Oh, and by the way, guys, y'all mentioned that there could only be two Siths at one time, Master and Apprentice, but I thought that Siths were those that dealt with the dark side of the Force. That's why I was assuming the Inquisitors were Siths. Am I off on this? And so I looked at it. Yeah. The Sith are an ancient religious order of force wielders devoted to the dark side of the Force, but not everyone who deals in the dark side of the Force are Sith. Like Inquisitors are force sensitive and have some ability with the Force, but are not considered Sith. And Wikipedia says, quote, as the Inquisitors were servants of the Sith, Galactic Emperor Darth Sidious also ensured that the Inquisitors weren't privy to all the knowledge and skills of a Sith Lord. In time, Inquisitors grew in power and skill, though no more than their Sith masters allowed them to be. The Sith are careful who they train and how they train them because it's the nature of the dark side to try to kill your master and be the top dog. But, you know, even with the rule of two, where there's one Sith master, one apprentice, it's assumed at some point the apprentice will try to kill the master and take his place. So, I mean, really, I think in Star Wars, they at some point decided there were only two Sith, and then they started telling more and more stories and were like, well, wait, we want to have more like evil Force users. So they have to explain that they're not Sith. They're just agents of the Sith who don't have all the skills, I guess.
I also think that's why, you know, Vader doesn't even like care for them that much. He's like, you know, I can take them out. That's no big deal.
I mean, it was like she said, you know, oh, Obi-Wan will pay for killing the Grand Inquisitor. He's like, I don't care about that. and then he goes, I might promote you to Grand Inquisitor. It's like, will you care if I die? No.
Family, you will die.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I'm not sure about this job. Can I reconsider my application?
Do you have anything else?
I've had another offer.
Like a mailroom or something? Yeah. All right, that is our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Great, great episode. You came in on the best one.
Yeah.
I was psyched.
If you want to write or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
While you're there, be sure to check out all our other shows.
Yeah, like Rima's doing Strange Indeed right now. I always mention that one because it's just the reason why... Or what am I saying? Stranger Things. It's the reason why Strange Indeed was first created to cover that show. So it's cool that it's back and she's getting to cover it. And I just recorded the episode for Better Call Saul, the mid-season finale, yesterday. And that'll be out very, very soon. And next episode for this is Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 4.
Wow. It's weird to think we're halfway.
Yeah.
All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.